Greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Our starting line on the sunny side of sports is international athletics. More than 41,000 runners will test their endurance in Sunday's BMW Berlin Marathon. The annual race in the German capital features one of the fastest courses in the world. In fact, the past six men's world records at the marathon distance have all been set in Berlin. The energetic Andy Edwards is in Germany, and he caught up with the Berlin Marathon's race director. Here's Andy.
I'm in Berlin, and the last week of September in Berlin means only one thing in terms of running, and that's the BMW Berlin Marathon. I'm with a man who's been at the heart of it for some years. Indeed, his family has as well. Mark Milder, born and bred, I think, in Berlin, and the Milder family have really been at the heart of the development of this race. I first came here in 1988, and when Berlin was still divided. Mark, you've seen it as a boy, and now as a man. All those years ago when you were at school and your father Horst Milder was key to development of it, did you think that this race would really become a marathon of world class?
No, we didn't think. I mean, we were hoping for it, or it was a big aspiration to develop Berlin and the race itself to world class. We in the 80s we have been seeing what's been happening in the US, New York, Chicago, Boston, were big names, and we were trying to invite runners to come to Berlin to experience our city, and also to have world class elite runners participate here. And we had never had the biggest sponsors with deep pockets to invite the world class at that stage, but somehow we developed ourselves. We had great enthusiastic crowds along the course, and the course itself was just fantastic. So it was probably just a matter of time that the world of running got or saw the potential of Berlin to have to achieve great times here, and also to experience a lively city, which gives a good combination of what marathons should be, if I could say that.
One thing struck me, and I've been coming here for many years working on the race and as a journalist, the relationship of the runners, the mass runners, yes, but also the elite runners to the Berlin public and the people who line the route. I mean, anywhere you go, you say, oh, yes, the crowds are enthusiastic. But there really seems to be a genuine identification. We've had the great runners, Paul Tergat breaking the world record, Haile Gebrselassie, Naoko Takahashi of Japan, Irina Mikitenko, also, obviously still the German women's record holder. There's been a great empathy between the crowds, who may not all be athletic specialists, and the elite runners.
Yes, where this is coming from, we don't know. We didn't educate them, but somehow it seems like Berlin is coming together on that day. We usually have pleasant weather. It's the beginning of the autumn season, and somehow the people are accustomed to line the streets. Nowadays we have around 80 organized music events taking place along the route, so it's like, yeah, really a lot of things are happening. And why this is, I mean, Berlin is also changing, obviously more people coming to Berlin and moving away, but still there seems to be this sympathy for our race, which is great.
And I noticed from the press conference today, we're talking on Thursday, and the race is Sunday. Of course, there's the big inline skating race, marathon, the day before on Saturday. You're adding refinements, video entertainments, putting on the emphasis on entertainment for both participants and the fans at the start line. So you're always trying to refine what you offer.
We think we are pretty much at the top of world running these days, but obviously others are having great ideas, doing new things, and we think we have been innovative in the recent past, and we want to continue down this road. And otherwise, it would get boring at some stage if we just repeat everything the way we did last year.
Yeah, and just lastly, of course, we can't forget it is very much a race on Sunday, the men's and women's elite fields. Interesting in both because perhaps they're not obvious, like a one strong man or woman. And with the men's, we've got Kenenisa Bekele. What can he do now after coming back, showing good form in London this year? Wilson Kipsang, who broke the world record 3 years ago here in Berlin, and Emmanuel Mutai, who's run very well in Berlin. They're three strong men, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it will be exciting to see what comes out of a process which took 3 to 4 months to prepare after London. We knew what was going on, and some of them were hoping to still qualify for the Olympics, and they didn't take them. And now we hope to put this as a positive energy into the race, into the mix. And yes, I mean, if these three are running together at the in the beginning and then try to battle each other in the end, it will just be great. And then if I wouldn't be surprised also if some other guy is breaking through. I mean, there are some newcomers. It's a guy, Mikkonen, who already ran 2:04. So it will be interesting.
And again, just rounding it up, Abero Kebede of Ethiopia. Now, she's won two Berlin titles. Two other women, Uta Pipic, one of the home favourites back in the 90s. She's won two, and Renata Kokowska of Poland has also won two. So Abero Kebede has a pretty good chance, you think, of equaling, you know, joining those two other women as joint record holders in terms of titles.
Yeah, I think the chances are there. And although they keep a low profile, when they are racing in the spring, you don't hear much from them until the autumn season, so it's a little bit difficult to judge. She must be the favorite, but there are others of which I know that they are also possibly to maybe do something which is a little bit disturbing to her.
Well, I think if we're not in for a disturbing weekend of running, we're certainly in for an exciting weekend. And indeed, the favourites can always be upset. Mark Milder, race director of the BMW Berlin Marathon, the 43rd edition this coming weekend. And Sunday morning, the marathon gets underway. Thanks very much, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Haile Gebrselassie. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
For our Voice of America sports fans, keeping score, Haile Gebrselassie set a new marathon world record in Berlin in 2007 when he clocked 2 hours, 4 minutes, and 26 seconds. The following year in Berlin, Haile broke his own record, lowering it to 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 59 seconds. The men's marathon world record has since been broken 3 more times in Berlin. Kenya's Dennis Kimeto is the current marathon world record holder. He clocked 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 57 seconds in the 2014 Berlin Marathon. In football news, Argentina and Barcelona star Lionel Messi is expected to be sidelined 3 weeks with a groin injury. Messi was hurt Wednesday during Barcelona's 1-1 draw with Atletico Madrid in a Spanish league match. He gingerly walked off Barcelona's Camp Nou pitch in the 58th minute, just before substitutes Angel Correa and Fernando Torres linked up to equalize for Atletico. After the match, Barcelona's head coach Luis Enrique said, and I quote, "With Leo Messi out, football loses. We all lose. Well, no argument here, coach." Enrique adds, We now have to look for different solutions. Of course, we are stronger with Messi, but we are strong enough. After five matches in Spain's La Liga, defending champion Barcelona currently trails front-running Real Madrid by 3 points. Real has 13 points. Sevilla is in second place with 11 points, and Barcelona has 10 points. Moving over to England's Premier League after five matches, Manchester City leads with 15 points, Everton has 13 points, and Tottenham Hotspur has 11 points. Arsenal, Chelsea, and Liverpool all have 10 points. One of the big sports controversies here in the United States in recent weeks has been protests during the national anthem at various athletic events. Before a preseason National Football League game, San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick sat down, opposed to the tradition of standing during the playing of the national anthem. During a post-game interview, Kaepernick explained his position, saying, and I quote, "I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. To me, this is bigger than football." Since then, other athletes at the high school, collegiate, and professional level, they followed Kaepernick's lead with their own protests. Some have sat, some have knelt, and some have raised their fists in the air during the national anthem. Christina Greer is a professor of political science at Fordham University in New York City. My VOA colleague David Byrd asked her, what do you think of Kaepernick's protest?
I think his protest is great. I mean, you know, for so many people who've complained about the recent uprisings in various cities, and Black Lives Matter in particular, saying, you know, I just don't understand why people have to protest so loudly. You know, if they protested in a different way, I'd agree with them. And so he is protesting in a different way, and people still don't agree with him because they don't agree with the message. And unfortunately, so much of the story is about him taking a knee and not about that second piece, which is, I'm taking a knee because of all the injustices that continue to happen in the 21st century. So, unfortunately, some of the message is getting lost because, in many ways, he's expected to shut up and play as a football player, and he's choosing not to do that. He's risking a lot. We have a history of black athletes risking a lot to stand up for what they believe in. We also have a history of black athletes who do not say anything, the O.J. Simpsons and Michael Jordans of the world. So, I think what's really important, and unfortunately the piece that's getting glossed over, is that he decided to take a knee quietly, right, so that he could start a conversation and really bring some awareness to what in many people would argue is just a cancer that is ripping this country apart. Now, the response, I think, has been very indicative of why it is indeed he is protesting and now other people are protesting. When you hear people calling him the N-word, when you see people burning his jersey, when you see people just fully refusing to recognize that possibly, just possibly what he is saying has a kernel of truth to it. It's an immediate backlash of the fact that he's not patriotic. So speaking out against this country or speaking for increased ability to have rights is the very thing that we've done since the beginning of the founding of the nation, when it was only land-owning white men who were doing this. And now we've expanded the franchise so that hopefully as many people as possible could actually take part in this type of dissent to make it a more perfect union. So I think, you know, the questions of his patriotism, the questions of people of color who are supporting him, especially their patriotism, really does tap into a much larger question of when will people of color and immigrants and people of different non-Christian faiths ever really be looked at as full equal members of this society. And I think that so many members or watchers of the NFL sort of subscribe to this very homogenous type of patriotism, their narrative of everything's fine, when so many communities know that that's just not the case.
The response to him has been I call it more of a visceral response on either side. And we have the internet now. We have social media. We have Twitter. We have Facebook. We have Snapchat. We have Instagram. We have all of these platforms where people can put forth their opinion to the entire world. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have that in 1968 when the two athletes protested with the black glove fist raised in the air. We didn't have that in 1972. With the terrorist attack against Israeli athletes, there wasn't the immediate public feedback that there is now.
Right. Well, and lots of people can find communities, both good and bad, right? And so the same way, you know, there's this visceral reaction where if someone says, I do believe that some people are being treated unfairly, and the visceral reaction is to say, no, they're not. Okay, without investigating or asking a further follow-up question, and then to join a community that says he's unpatriotic, we shouldn't support him, we shouldn't support anything he does. The positive side of that is, you know, the hashtag Veterans for Kaepernick, where it's thousands of black veterans who are saying, you know, this protest is very indeed patriotic. This is why I'm in Afghanistan or Iraq. And, you know, there's so many people who shared stories of discrimination and flat-out racism in the armed services while they're serving this nation. And so it is a shared community to realize that, one, you're not alone. Two, you're absolutely not crazy to realize that something is amiss. And three, it is safety in numbers in many ways. And so I think that the internet, not just chat rooms and blogs and Facebook, but also Twitter, you know, is really definitely linking people up, sometimes for good, sometimes not so much.
If the protest continues on, do you think people are just going to get tired of it? Do you think they'll just say, okay, we heard you, now get over it and play football?
Right. Well, I mean, that's part of the problem with this country and our attention span is oftentimes people do want you just to get over it. The problem is children getting killed by police is not something that we can just get over because it's still happening, right? Black men and black women getting killed by the state on a pretty consistent basis isn't something that just happens once in a blue moon. It's happening across the country, and these people aren't being punished. So if certain people feel a little uncomfortable for 2 hours out of their Sunday, that's their issue, right? I think the better question should be, why aren't you outraged that your fellow citizens, your fellow Americans, are not having the same experience as you are, and there's some people who are living in desperate fear of the state, and you're choosing to do nothing, and you're really choosing not to even hear the cries of your fellow citizens.
That's Christina Greer, a professor of political science at Fordham University, and she was talking with my VOA colleague David Byrd from New York City. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What is trending in the sports world on this Thursday?
Well, a follow-up to a story that we talked about yesterday after the U.S. men's hockey team lost 4-2 to Canada in the World Cup of Hockey. There were some U.S. players who kind of struck back at the team in varying forms. We talked about Josh Pauls, who is on the Paralympic sled hockey team, the gold medal winning sled hockey team, and he said he was glad to be born without legs and that the team couldn't compete and that they were a better team, the sled hockey team. He also had other players striking out, like Phil Kessel, who tweeted out. He was not included on the team, on Team USA, and he tweeted out, he said, seems like, you know, there should be something that I'm supposed to be doing right now, but I can't put my finger on it, and tweeted that out during the game, so kind of striking back. So now the players are coming to the team's defense, and they're putting out their own statements on social media, calling it disappointing that these players are attacking the men's hockey team and saying that they're not representing them well. They say that they go out there and they fight. David Bax says he understands that there's hard feelings when people don't get selected, like Phil Kessel tweeted out, but he said that we're there to win, and despite all that talk, that's our main goal.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
So two big names that we've talked about on the show before. Lionel Messi, of course, world-famous footballer, going to be out for the next 3 weeks after he ruptured his right abductor muscle in his thigh. And this has sent social media into a tizzy. People are wondering what they're going to do with themselves for the next 3 weeks. One person said, I officially quit life for 3 weeks. They don't want to watch any kind of football if Messi's not involved. So there's a lot of people who are very upset about this injury and hoping that he gets well soon. And they're concerned about their team's chances without him. Hopefully they'll still do well, but there's concern there for sure.
Andrew, I'll repeat a quote I said earlier in the show from Barcelona's head coach Luis Enrique regarding Messi's injury. And his quote is, with Leo Messi out, football loses, we all lose. I mean, he's such a transcendent player that regardless of how you feel about Barcelona, yeah, it's always enjoyable to see Leo Messi out there on the pitch.
Oh, absolutely. And that statement's a little more eloquent than the person who tweeted out and said, I officially quit life for 3 weeks. But the same sentiment, you know, it is a huge loss for the next 3 weeks for all of football.
We'll have to see how Barca does with Messi out. As I mentioned, they're currently 3 points behind front-running Real Madrid in Spain's La Liga. But they have plenty of talent on that Barca roster, so maybe they can make up for Messi's absence. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, another name that we've been talking about for weeks now, Colin Kaepernick and his protest on the sidelines, has gotten him onto the cover of Time magazine here in the U.S. And so that is being shared across social media. A lot of people saying, if there was any doubt about him trying to do this to raise awareness, this kind of quashes that, because he did this, he said, to raise awareness about this issue. It has raised awareness to the point where he is on the cover of Time magazine. So it's a pretty, you know, it's a stunning photo. It's Colin Kaepernick kneeling against a black backdrop. And so a lot of people sharing that image around, saying they're going to go out and buy that magazine. But even if you don't get to the newsstand, you're seeing that image already spread across social media and as evidence of part of his campaign.
And I think Time magazine comes out each year with its Person of the Year, Andrew. It's kind of a, I won't say random selection, but it can be a sports personality. It could be a politician. It could be an entertainer. So maybe Kaepernick is going to be in the running this year.
Yeah, usually they have, you know, 10 finalists that they try to choose between. And I would not be surprised if he was one of those 10 finalists, because he really has kicked off a conversation, especially on social media, has brought out so many different opinions and started so many different conversations about these issues of race and other things that he's trying to publicize. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him on that finalist list.
Andrew, on the political front, I understand you'll be heading north to New York City to cover a pretty big debate coming up, right?
Yes, I will be there Monday night, the main event in Hofstra University in New York. I will be there to cover it all. And maybe while I'm up there, watch the Mets play. I don't know. I don't think I'll be able to get to a Mets game, but at least to watch them on TV. But another person who's trending, who actually started out in New York, Vin Scully. Now, Vin Scully, for our listeners who don't know, has been the announcer with the Dodgers. And I say Dodgers because he started with the Brooklyn Dodgers baseball team, and then they moved to Los Angeles in, I believe, 1958. He has been the play-by-play announcer for the team for 67 years.
Incredible
career, and he is retiring finally this year. Actually, this Sunday will be his last home game at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles announcing. And because it's his last home game and because he's had such a momentous career, Major League Baseball is pulling out all the stops. They're going to simulcast the game online so people can watch it across the country. Now, this is something they, you know, I think just only for maybe the playoff games and the All-Star game are the only games that get shown across the country. And so he gets this honor to have his final game that he's broadcasting in Los Angeles. And a lot of well wishes for him on social media. A lot of people really sad to see him go. They can't imagine what the Los Angeles Dodgers are going to be like without him. I mean, keep in mind, he's been doing this 67 years, the majority, I would say, of Dodgers fans don't remember a time when Vin Scully wasn't announcing the games.
Amazing.
So just absolutely, you know, the longevity that he's been able to keep this up is really touched a nerve with people, and they're really wishing him well, but really, really sad to see him go.
Sunnyside of Sports salute to Vin Scully, a proud Fordham University graduate. We heard from Christina Greer, a professor at Fordham. Fordham also the alma mater of my VOA colleague, Joe DiCapua. Go Fordham! I think it's the Rams, right?
I think Fordham Rams.
Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. And that wraps up the September 22nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Political violence has ravaged the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo in recent days. Several dozen people have reportedly been killed in protests that erupted September 19th in Kinshasa against the efforts of President Joseph Kabila to remain in power beyond the end of his mandate this December. The United States is disappointed by the Democratic Republic of the Congo Electoral Commission's failure to announce an elections calendar today, as called for by the DRC Constitution, said U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby in a statement issued September 19th. Mr. Kirby said the U.S. condemns all violence and calls upon all Congolese stakeholders to exercise restraint and avoid provocation, while reiterating that the DRC government has the primary responsibility for protecting human rights, including the right to peaceful assembly and freedom of expression. These tragic events, he noted, underscore the need for a truly inclusive dialogue process aimed at reaching consensus on holding presidential elections as soon as technically feasible and guaranteeing the country's first democratic transition of power. In addition, Mr. Kirby stated, the United States believes that any individuals who are responsible for perpetrating violence or repression should be held accountable and remains ready to impose additional targeted sanctions. The United States continues to work with the DRC government, the political opposition, civil society, and the international community for a resolution that will address the concerns and interests of the Congolese people who deserve a lasting peace. As a start, the United States government has called upon the DRC government to publicly promise that elections will be held next year, leading to the country's first democratic transition.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
Africa, this is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.